Hey Wendigos, it's Ori, aka Gore. Just a couple of quick announcements before we start the show. First, I want to thank everyone who has used the promo code NeverAgain at alexandriaarchives.com/shop for 20% off your purchase. If you haven't yet, you have until March 24th to use the code. Remember, 100% of the proceeds of the sale will be going to the Stoneman Douglas Victims Fund and March for Our Lives. Next, we want to take a moment to thank our fantastic patrons. If you're interested in learning more about Alexandria, you can get access to our super sweet bonus content available to our patrons for just $1 a month. Just visit patreon.com/AlexandriaArchives, and for $1 a month, you can keep up with Kilt, Gore, and lots of other knuckleheads around town. Finally, we've been noticing a pattern with some of our patrons. Even though you can get access to that sweet, sweet bonus content for just $1, some of you awesome Wendigos are being extra generous and patroning more. So, we decided to give back. Starting today, if you donate $5 or more, on top of being thanked on both our Twitter and Facebook, you'll also be thanked on air. If you donate $10 or more, you'll not only be thanked on air, but you will also have a character named after you. This might be a caller, or a special guest, or a character in a story. If you donate $20 or more, you will have a part of the town named after you. This might be a street, like Redfield Lane, or a business, or whatever. It will become a permanent staple of Alexandria canon. That said, we'd like to thank a few people very quick. Chris Redfield, Sam Price, Amanda Osman Balzell, Michelle O. Oh, I'm very sorry I'm mispronouncing that, Michelle. O-U-G-H. Sorry about that. Jonathan Oden? Crap. Sorry, Jonathan. Charlene Ramler, Valerie Coop, Alex, and everyone who has patroned us so far. I know it's cliche, but you really are the spark that keeps Morning Wood's little on-air light glowing. Thank you to all of you, to all of our listeners, and as always, Ia Ia Wendigos.
Good evening, Wendigos. As you might have noticed, we're getting kind of a late start to the broadcast. Your girl Morning Wood had a little slip and fall outside the student union tonight. These boots were made for walking, but not on ice, turns out. I'm gonna have a nice bruise on my ass tomorrow. I hope you guys are staying safe and warm out there. It's getting frosty on the swamp. Let's not waste any time here, shall we? Caller one, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I have a question about Gore.
Well, I'm not exactly my vampire's keeper or anything, but I guess I can do my best. Shoot.
Do you know if he's in the market for a thrall?
What?
You know, a thrall or like a ghoul. When you get together for your clandestine meetings, has he mentioned to you that he's looking for any minions or underlings to help him, aid him in his dark masquerades?
Clandestine meetings. Do you mean our D&D game? Oh, speak of the devil, caller one, that's the Bob line. Kilt had recursive installed it after the hurricane. Go for your girl, Bobberinos.
Yeah, I have a question for the caller. What the hell is a thrall?
A thrall, Gore, thank you very much for asking, is a mortal companion to an undead creature, such as yourself, that has been fed some of the vampire's blood, putting them under the vampire's control. They are often candidates who are being vetted to eventually be turned into a vampire themselves. But more commonly, they're used as either personal assistants and errand runners, gophers, that sort of thing.
God damn it, Kilt, what did I tell you about breaking into my calls?
Well, I wouldn't have to break into your phone calls if you just do your damned assigned chores. It's your turn to floss the crystallic generators. Did you even look at the chore list?
What chore list?
The chore list. On the bulletin board, next to the wanted and missing persons posters.
Boys?
Wait, you mean the one with that bright yellow and blue monster drawn on it?
Oh, you mean Chorlax?
Chorlax?
Chorlax. What, you don't know from Chorlax?
What the hell is a Chorlax?
Well, Chorlax is a cryptid. I think of Acadian origin, if memory serves. Legend has it, he or she guilt you into helping out around the house. Imagine that.
Oh, wait, hang on. We're getting another call. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Morningwood. My name's Nate Calhoun, host of the Cryptid Handler podcast, a podcast for cryptids and their handlers. If you're listening, that's you too. Longtime listener, first-time caller. I might be able to shed some light on the Chorlax debate. The Chorlax, as we know it today, is an Appalachian folktale derived from the old Algonquin legend of the horned bear of the menial tasks, which, itself, has roots in the nine-legged boar of...
Hang on a sec. We have another call. You're on the air, caller.
Hi, Morningwood.
Hi there. Who am I talking to?
I'm Alex Flanagan.
And I'm Addison Peacock.
And we host the Cryptid Keeper podcast.
A podcast for cryptids and their keepers.
That's us. And if you're listening, that's you too.
Hello?
Well, well, I should have known you two would have shown up.
And we should have known you would be as misinformed as a bog wench in the middle of Death Valley.
Oh, snap.
Well, the horned bear of menial tasks does have roots in an Algonquin legend.
Chorlax is derived from Mesoamerican folklore, not Appalachian.
Obviously.
So wait, does that make the thing you drew on the list a Chorlax or a menial task bear kilt?
Now I'm wondering.
A common misconception. The Mesoamerican folklore in question can trace its heritage back to Puebloan traders. Thus, would make it a plains legend, if anything. Something I wouldn't expect these hacks to know.
Hacks? You stole our tagline. You just switched keeper for handler. It doesn't even alliterate.
Oh, please. I had the idea for Cryptid Handler in January of 2017. You lot didn't even come out until February.
You didn't publish until March.
I was editing! Something I wouldn't expect you to know anything about, Miss... Oh, we'll fix that in post.
That doesn't change the fact that Chorlax is from the frickin' Yucatan, you kelpie out of water.
Oh, so we're name-calling now?
Oh, we're way past name-calling. We've suffered your sardonic irreverence for long enough.
You best find yourself a second crypto boy. Weehawken. Dawn.
Oh, you are so on!
The generator floss is underneath the sink.
Yeah, I'll jump on that. Later, MW.
Bye, boys. Well, Wendigos, it's about time we opened up the Alexandria Arc.
Hey, wait a minute. What about me?
Oh, geez, are you still on the line? Sorry, what was your question again?
Ugh, is Gore looking for a thrall?
Oh, no idea. Ask him. Okay, kids, you've waited long enough. How's about we do a little digging through the Alexandria archives? Enjoy.
I don't know what you heard, but there's nothing out in that swamp. It's about as close to Pure D. Webster's Dictionary Swamp as you can find. The only thing... what's the word? Nefarious? The only thing nefarious that's ever been out there is a bunch of people who want people like you and me, good God-fearing people, to think there's something out there. This town, these... people. They like to put on like they got some kind of refinement. You got the university, yeah, and the local theater crowd that thinks a play ain't no good unless somebody cries and somebody dies. And the Chamber Music Society, which, if you ask me, half of what they put on sounds more like chamber pot music. But people in Alexandria get up to all kinds of low-class nonsense, just like South Mills and Como and every other little town up here. And everybody knows everybody else's business around here. I can't so much as sneeze without some busybody half a mile away going, "I heard Danny Lamb got pneumonia in both his lungs and his kin's already picking out a casket." You can always tell when they had the torque on the air wrench turned up too high when they put the tire on. Oh, there it goes. Yeah, so, anybody who's up to something around here, or maybe just needs a break from the way people in this town look at them, they're going to want a little privacy. And the swamp's got plenty of that. If people are scared to go snooping around out there because of something their granddaddy told them one time, well, that's even better for the person who don't want to be snooped on, ain't it? Might as well let people spread them stories about a creature with a million hungry mouths but no eyes, or whatever it is they say. Looks to me like you were headed out that way before this tire went. I see that Pennsylvania plate, though. Are you a... visiting scholar. Well, welcome to Alexandria. We don't usually greet visitors with a blown tire. Just your lucky night, I reckon. You ever drive down any of them swamp roads before tonight? I don't mean all the way to the end. I'm not even sure all of them have ends, tell the truth. It looks like wetlands out there, and it is, mostly, but you drive a little ways, and you start to notice all these patches of dry ground. These places a man could, I don't know, set up a little lean-to, or hide a still like them Maney boys used to do, or even just park a car for a good quiet half hour and conduct a real penetrating search of the back seat, if you catch my meaning. You heard about Calvin Woodard, owns the furniture store. I suppose not if you don't live around here, but by now ain't a soul in town don't know about Calvin, so I ain't telling tales here. There was this stretch of 4 or 5 months, this was, I don't know, 10 years ago now, this stretch when Calvin would drive his little silver Oldsmobile Alero out into the swamp just about every Wednesday night. Rain or shine, hot or cold, there went Calvin, down along Highway 32, out toward Folly Road, and then who knows where. Tommy Brantley at the Sitgo on the way out of town, he probably passed it back yonder, he said you could just about set your watch to it. Oh, don't let that lug nut get away now, we're gonna need that. People come up with all kinds of wild stories about what Calvin was doing on his little nighttime drives out to the swamp. The thing is, he didn't seem to mind folks talking about dark rituals of blood and spit and dirt, or hazy vistas of a world beyond our paltry mortal geometry, or a chanted language of ancient power that could turn an unready person's mind inside out, like that. Here, roll that tire over there and lean it up. Ah, there you go, right there. Now, Calvin was perfectly content to let people wag their tongues like a pack of happy dogs, because, come to find out, he wasn't out there consorting with beasts or any nonsense like that. Calvin was consorting with his cross-the-street neighbor's wife while she was supposed to be at prayer meeting at the First Baptist Church. Regina Barnes won't much to look at, but she won't no beast. Well, as far as I know. I'm sorry, listen to me run my mouth. Consider the beam in thine own eye. I think the good book says something about that. Here's what I mean to say. Alexandria is just like any other little town, and our swamp is just like any other swamp. It's just a low point in the earth. A piece of ground that's sunk just a bit below everything else around it. So all things wet and foul flow down into it and gather there and serve as a kind of reservoir of reasons, or maybe excuses, or alibis? Stories, in any case. Still, stories do have a power. Ain't no way around that. I was 17 years old before I was willing to go out in that swamp on my own. Everybody I knew had a different story about what went on out there, what lived out there. Most of them came down to something with big teeth and bad intentions that would eat you up and digest you and spit you out the other end, remade into something you weren't supposed to be. Something not right. Something that didn't fit God's plan for this world. I never could quite see there was any such plan, but still I didn't have much reason to go out there. Whatever was or wasn't there, when I was younger, I never saw it as having anything to do with me. You know how it is with teenagers, though, especially boys. You can hear all the warnings in the world, but when Bobby Etheridge dares you to go sit out in the swamp at midnight and recite a secret word that he heard from his cousin Larry in Moyock, who swore up and down that it was the true name of the creature that ruled the swamp, and who could only be summoned by the... Well, you see my point. Bobby dared me. What was I supposed to do? I was 17, and I won't no chicken. You ought to be proud of yourself. A lot of people don't remember to keep their spare inflated. Better than half the time I come out on calls like this. I go to replace a flat tire and the spare's just as flat, and then I gotta tow him back into town. I suppose that's why you're a visiting scholar, not a visiting dum-dum. Bobby's little dare was how I come to find myself driving out along the Cross Canal on a Saturday night in the middle of October in my senior year of high school, like a darn fool. I'd been out there before, but always with somebody else and always in the daytime. The swamp's different at night. Everything's a shadow. Some of the shadows move. Some of them make noise. Some of them don't, which is the real worry. But honestly, the worst thing you're likely to come across out there is a hungry black bear, which ain't exactly fun, but it is, you know, earthly. Not that I was really afraid of anything coming to get me that night. I was in my little Chevy S10. I won't sitting out in a circle of candles and sticks like some stupid hazing. Has anybody told you about the little club at the university yet? The Dull Blades? The Crossed Swords? The Broken Spears, they're called. Anytime somebody wants to join their little secret society that everybody knows about, they basically kidnap him, take him out into the swamp in the middle of the night, and make him sit there in a little circle till the sun comes up. And they say something like, "You must not leave the sacred circle. We used all of Grandma's good Sunday dinner candles to make it." Can you believe that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard a bunch of smart college boys do, and I've lived here my entire life. The mosquitoes alone would eat you so... Well, I was in my truck on the correct side of a bunch of tempered glass and body panels. So even if a hungry bear did show up, he was going to have to knock politely before he got his snack. I drove out a good ways and pulled off the side of the road on this wide, dry patch. I cut off the truck, and I waited. I told Bobby and them I'd get out of the truck at midnight, say Cousin Larry's secret word, and see what happened. And then meet them all back at the Waffle House and tell them about it. I did notice that Bobby didn't exactly volunteer to go out there with me to verify I had done the deed, which I thought was interesting. He was just as scared of the swamp as everybody else in this pissant town, no matter how much chew he slid behind his bottom lip. And listen, I may not be a visiting scholar, but I do know how dumb this sounds. I know I could have just parked my truck wherever, waited an hour or whatever it took, and then gone back with some story about a big old drooling beast twice as big as a bear and 10 times as mean that showed up when I said the word and how I barely got out with my life. And they'd have believed it. They'd eaten it up. But I said I was going to do something, and I intended to do it. That's just how I am. How I was even then. Before. See, you can turn lug nuts with a regular old wrench as tight as they ever need to be. Boys like them air wrenches because they can pretend they're on a NASCAR pit crew instead of working at Ben Sharp's halfway falling down shop for a dollar over minimum wage and free Pepsi Colas. Zip, zip, listen to me, everybody. I'm a big boy now. I swear, this town. Yeah, so I sat in my truck, and I killed time. Mostly just listened to the radio. Probably whatever was coming out of that rinky-dink little college station. I used to listen to it all the time, but I can't no more. They used to play music, good music, and now it's just a bunch of talking about... I can't even tell what they're talking about half the time. Nonsense. Anyway, I listened to the radio and probably entertained some indecent thoughts about Melissa Adams in my fifth period geometry class. The teacher spent a lot of time talking about triangles, but the only shape I wanted to learn anything about was Melissa's. I reckon I did have a certain triangular focus. I know now that the midnight part was pure foolishness. The time didn't matter. At least, not the way we measure time. And I didn't have to say any special name or word. It didn't matter what I said or didn't say, or what I did at all. I think it was more that there was something inside me. Something that was ready or open. Or maybe it was nothing inside me. Like recognizing like. I don't know exactly what time it was. It won't midnight yet, I know that, because I hadn't been sitting out there in the dark for more than a half hour. When nothing happened. I can tell you didn't really hear me, so let me say that again. Nothing happened. 1 second, there was something. A whole lot of somethings, in fact. Cypress trees, a little bit of moon, the sound of the radio, the cushion of my truck seat under my butt. And then in the next second, there was nothing. Everywhere I looked, everything was nothing. I was in nothing. It wasn't like you're probably thinking, a big blank field of white or something like that. It didn't have a color or a shape or even a texture. And even though it was nothing, I knew it was so much bigger than I was. Nothing stretched on forever. In every direction. It's possible there weren't any such things as directions. It was just empty. and infinite. I tell you what, buddy, I thought I was food. Same as if a bear had come knocking on my truck window. I can't say I understood what was about to eat me, but I sure enough thought I was supper for something. Or nothing. But then, nothing spoke to me. Or maybe it's more that I was made to understand it through some means I can't exactly describe. I was shown what nothing really was. It was an emptiness so big it could never be filled. It couldn't even conceive of fullness. It could consume everything that had ever been and still have room for everything that ever would be. So yeah, it could gobble me up. I was right to be afraid of that. But it hadn't done that yet. And there had to be a reason. In that empty space outside of time, I found that I could think about my life fully. I could see all of it in ways a 17-year-old boy usually can't. I was living in this dead-end town in middle of nowhere, North Carolina, where everybody knows everybody. And because everybody already knows you, you don't ever get to be anything other than what everybody already knows you are. And what I was the C-minus son of a part-time Piggly Wiggly cashier and a tow truck driver. That's my daddy's name still painted on the side of the truck back there. Everybody knew what I was and what I was going to be. I reckon I knew it too. I couldn't be bothered to pull those C-minus grades up, because there never seemed to be much point to it. What did I have to look forward to in this life, in this town? Nothing. I'll never know for sure, but I think that feeling, was why nothing was holding me and speaking to me. I think that was why he was giving me an opportunity. Nothing needed to eat or to be fed by a helper, an assistant, you could say. It was willing to release me if I would promise to help feed it. And I got the sense that this wasn't the kind of promise I could make with my fingers crossed and then forget about. Like, if I said I would do this, it would consume my ability to not do it. But it won't just let me go back to my dead-end life. If I helped it, nothing would help me too. I could feed it things that I needed to get rid of. It could eat small things or big things. And it could eat things that didn't have dimensions, things that just were, things that were known or felt. Pain, anger, sadness. Nothing could make it all go away. When I got back to the Waffle House, I told Bobby and them I'd seen something out there that spooked the daylights out of me. And I couldn't say the word, I couldn't stay, I had to run. Which was a lie, of course. I'd seen nothing. And I wasn't scared. Not after we came to our agreement. Bobby and the other boys gave me a bunch of grief for running away, of course. Called me a chicken. Just an hour before, that really would have gotten to me. I'd have gotten all worked up about proving I was a man. But at that moment, sitting in that greasy booth with somebody going bark, bark, bark right in my ear, I didn't feel angry or hurt or like I had anything to prove. I just felt nothing. I've fed it lots of things over the years. Junk cars I didn't have no place to park. Just last week I got rid of a busted old TV. Heavy sucker. But nothing has a real flexible palate. You'd be surprised how filling one man's rage and frustration can be. Filling and quite tasty, I'm told. Sort of spicy. I suppose in a lot of ways I'm lucky that nothing found me before I had to grind my way through a stunted life around here looking for it, and then finding it on my deathbed like most people. I can see from your face you don't believe me, but that does make me lucky. I've seen what it's like to go the other way. I saw the look in my daddy's eyes right as he died, when he found nothing, and when he understood. His eyes got real wide and then real narrow. It was this look like, I can't believe I spent all that time for nothing. What a fool I was to try so hard. I was a real tore up when Daddy died. I fed that to nothing too. which is probably why I ain't felt much need to repaint the truck. I see his name up there, those swirly white letters, and it's fine. Just the name of a man who used to be, and now he ain't. Just paint on the side of a truck. But there ain't no filling it up entirely, and sometimes nothing gets so famished that it catches a case of the can't help it's. It can be kind of indiscriminate about what it eats. A million hungry mouths and no eyes, you might say. The way Calvin Woodard told it, Regina Barnes disappeared right out from under him while they were engaged in the act, so to speak. It was a Wednesday night, and they were having one of their special little private prayer meetings, both of them in the back seat of Calvin's Alero, parked somewhere out along Cheryl Ditch. One second she was there, he said, and the next second he's falling a few inches through empty space onto the back seat. Cloth upholstery. He left a bit of a stain. By the time it all shook out, with the police and everything, they didn't have enough to hang any charges on Calvin. They never found Regina's body, put it down as an accidental drowning, which is what they usually do when somebody goes missing out in the swamp. But Calvin told him again and again that it won't no drowning, that Regina had up and disappeared. He told the police, he told Regina's husband and family, mortifying as that must have been. For probably 6 months after, he told anybody who would listen, until nobody would. I hear now he spends most days holed up in the little back office of his furniture store, trying to figure out how to get to where Regina went. Not that he knows where that is, exactly. I might help. When he's ready. When he's got nothing left but nothing. You might be surprised just how many accidental drownings we got on the books around here. Seems like people are all the time going missing out in the swamp. Sometimes the people who live here, sometimes people just passing through. Visitors. That's all a long way of saying that's how come I know. About the swamp, I mean. About what's there and what's not there. Like I said, I'm a God-fearing man, and my God, my empty, unceasing God, makes sure that there's nothing out in that swamp. I just do my little part to help. All right, Buddy Rowe, all finished up here. Funny thing about this stretch of road, a lot of blown tires out here. I don't know what it is about this section. If I was you, I wouldn't do too much driving without picking up a fresh spare. You don't want to count on getting a second chance. Tommy's probably still out at the Citgo station, back the way you came, about a half mile. You just tell him Danny Lamb sent you. He'll fix you up. No, hey, put your wallet away. No, I'm serious. Don't worry about it. You're a guest in our town. Consider this a welcome gift. This one don't cost you nothing.
So I got to thinking, this is the time of year when all the critters burrow down and hold tight till the cold passes, right? Do you suppose cryptids do the same? This is going to be driving me crazy all night. Well, I'm going to go find a cold press for this bruise of mine. Watch where you're walking, Wendigos. It's dark out there.